now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. It's a new day in America.
A new dawn is what my newspaper said. It was amazing.
A new dawn in America.
I went, well, hey, there's one every day.
You know, I wrote a blog the other day about the fact Sarah and I voted for Obama, and I really ticked some people off.
I know. I've nearly looked for another podcast partner, you traitor.
I let Sarah read it, and she said, what are you doing, trying to cut down the podcast again? I said, just thinning the herd, darling, thinning the herd. There's too many people.
You let me. So why'd you make that vote?
Why did I make the
yourself?
Vote? Oh, gosh, for a number of reasons. It's not that I'm blind to the fact that this could all be just hope and there's no substance behind it. That could well be true. In the end of it, you know, after being in Virginia and being at Monticello, where Thomas Jefferson built his mansion.
Oh, Thomas Jefferson met with you and suggested that.
Well, I actually did talk to Thomas Jefferson, but he was a reenactor down at Williamsburg. No, but you sit there and think about, you know what, this whole country was founded by white men for white men, basically.
And that was the purpose?
It was. Okay. You had to be a white male, you know, white Anglo-Saxon male Protestant landowner to even count.
And they figured you had a vested interest. You'd care.
Here's what I love about it. When I watched people of color cry their eyes out to think this, and I don't mean just the, oh, hey, we won. I mean the people that were just shocked that this could ever happen. That after 43
totally
white
cool.
male guys, yeah. there's going to be a black president of these United States. And I, for one, am very excited about all that.
Now, sure. Now I can join you on that parade.
I also think the Republicans need a good slap upside the head.
Okay.
They've totally
sure.
sold out this country for their own gain and good. And I don't know how you keep rewarding that. It's because I'm so committed to being anti-abortion and so committed about gay rights that, you know what? I'm not going to vote a Democrat in there no matter what. I think at some point, and I think McCain ran the poorest campaign. I loved his concession speech. When I heard him give his concession speech, I'm thinking, I could have voted for that guy. Where has that guy been? I haven't seen him since a year ago November when he started winning the nomination.
See, I sort of feel like regardless of how the campaign went, that's who the guy is personally. I think I don't know him, but from the few things that I listen to, I just couldn't adopt the social agenda that comes out of so much of the Democratic Party. I grew up a whole family of Democrats. I'm probably the only one that votes Republican. But I look at some of what's going on, and it's like, gosh, you know, I wish you could frankly treat this like a buffet, pick and choose. Because I'm not thrilled with either side of the aisle.
I hear you.
Okay? And I don't have an allegiance to one versus the other. But I just go like, gosh, there's an entitlement mentality that I was just going like, I don't really get that. A lot of the economics, I don't really get that. I don't like that.
I don't get that either and don't like it. But you know what? The next 4 years are not going to be about increased social programs. We've got to pay for the mess of the last 8 years.
If I look at the propositions, everyone voted for a new political credit card, and we'll just pass it to the next generation.
Oh, and that's what's so sad.
Billions of dollars of bond measures. I'm just going like, when does the day where people recognize, you know what, you have to live within your means. You just do.
You think?
Yeah, I really think that. And I don't see that happening in any mindset.
You don't see it happening in families. You don't see it happening with the government.
No.
You don't. But we've created such a hole now. There is such a hole. And I honestly
think there's room for everyone.
And I honestly think this. Honestly, if you love – and I'm a lifetime Republican. I've never voted for a Democratic presidential candidate.
Till now.
Ever before. I've not. But honestly, in some sordid way, if I am a good Republican, I think this is best for the Republican Party. If McCain had somehow pulled this thing out and we still had the White House, you know what? Nothing would substantively change within the Republican Party.
All right, I can buy that.
And so I think the best thing to do is, you know what? You guys need to walk away and figure it out and get it right and come back and try again and stop pandering to
and
rich people.
There's something to come back to.
Yeah, there may not be. But you know what? Amongst all that, God's in charge after all.
We got an unshakable king and an unshakable kingdom, and I'm cool with that.
I did get an email this morning. Someone asked me, how much do you think characterizing God as a black woman in the shack contributed to people voting for Obama?
Less than 4 million people.
I'm thinking not at all, but...
No, I got several emails accusing us of helping that all happen. And I thought, well, great, that's fine.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I don't think Papa was running for president. No. It was Obama.
Yeah. I mean, I love the fact that there is now a little bit of being able to say, you know what? Because I think especially for my generation and younger, race is not the big issue that it was to the generation. It's not as much.
I hear you.
And so I go, like, great, maybe we can put this one aside. Not completely, but in a large measure that's just, I don't think that's what this was about.
Here's what's inconceivable. 43 years ago.
It was a huge issue.
A black man couldn't vote in an election.
I know, that just...
See, that's just mind-boggling. To look back now, I lived back then.
I didn't. I was 42. I'm 42.
I lived back then. I lived with the whole thing when Martin Luther King and, the whole... Evangelical Christianity was so against him, his moral flaws, his just, it was all about his moral flaws. I mean, but the real reason was white man didn't want to give up power. And whenever you invite more people to the table, people already at the table have to give up some of their power to be inclusive of others. 45 years ago, that wasn't happening. It wasn't going to happen. There are people who died in the streets to try and move this country to a different place. And think 40 some odd years later, we actually get to have a black man in the White House who is incredibly intelligent, to say nothing else. He's incredibly articulate, which goes a long way from not having a president who can string two sentences together to make sense for 8 years. And now I'm hopeful. Here's what I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful he has the ability to really do a country and bring red states and blue states together. That was his rhetoric. It was Bush's too, and Bush's didn't follow it. I'm hoping he does. I'm going to hold him to it.
It's interesting.
I'm going to call him every Monday and say, are you bringing together blue states and red states?
There you go. One big purple family.
How does that roll?
We're sitting there in the living room watching this, and Jonathan's response when all of a sudden Obama's president, he just came back from football, and it looked like he just got crushed, getting sacked or something like that. And he just said, man, Dad, are we going to be okay? That was his first response.
Wow,
Dad, are we going to be okay? Like, yeah, Jonathan, we're going to be fine. And then we're
going to be a lot poorer.
Yeah, but... we're going to pay a whole lot more for everyone else. But then Taylor's watching John McCain's concession speech, and she's sitting on Kelly's lap, and all of a sudden she gets teary. And Kelly's looking at me like, Taylor's crying. And I'm just going like, what's up with this? She was feeling bad for the poor grandpa that wasn't going to be able to be president, and she kind of she liked him. And it's just sort of interesting. We're having a wonderful family discussion, and the kids are looking at me like, well, gosh, our guy lost. And it's like, yeah, but I said, it's not necessarily so bad. If this guy really has the capacity to inspire a nation to be servants, to be willing to sacrifice, to no longer focus on just self and what I get out of it. I said, the concerns I have are the entitlement mentality. But if he truly can inspire people to say, you know what, let's bring back the greatness of America. If it's not just a good speechwriter, but it's really in his heart. And no sooner did I say that than all of a sudden that's what was part of his speech. The very next words was, a call to service and a call to sacrifice. And I was going like, those are, I believe, the elements in our foundation as a nation that do invite greatness, because I'm not living for myself. I'm a single part in a much larger drama. And if that mentality can come back, and he certainly has the oratory skills, and right now he is inspiring hope. I sat there and went, you know what? Then I'm all for that.
Yeah, let's try this. It can't be worse than the last 8 years. It can't be.
But so I'm all for that. It's just, I think that's where I'm just going, like, I don't want another rousing sermon. I want to see some lived out reality where it's like, it isn't about me and myself. isn't about the selfishness of how can I? Because I sort of feel like at the end of the day, everyone seemed to be voting for, well, what serves me and my interests the best.
No, that's always what's true in politics.
And I'm just going like, gosh, that seems to just doom all of politics because it's the government of self-interest. And, you know, the one positive thing is I sat there like, well, okay, seems like the rest of the world's kind of excited about the outcome. So maybe we won't be the most hated nation on the planet.
I'm hopeful that helps.
That might help. So that way, if we do get bombed, we'll have at least a few people that feel bad for us.
But, you know, no sooner had I posted that little blog than people started just bashing me. I mean, just incredible. The lies that were told about Obama. You know, this is probably the best stealth Al Qaeda candidate that they could pull the wool over our eyes. And I mean, it's just what people.
Bubba, do you read it?
And this has shocked me about the shack, quite honestly. What we've suffered has not been great, admittedly, over the last year and a half. But what we have suffered from people who are just willing to make up a story to discredit whatever they need to discredit. You know, I understood when my quote-unquote friends and brothers did it, who needed to move me out of a ministry deal. I understand why they just make up stuff so that people would believe lies about me. I guess I was really shocked when you read stuff in a real magazine or a real newspaper, when people write stuff in there that, you know, there might be some point of truth behind it. But what I've discovered in the last year and a half is that people who are angry, people who are scared, will make up. I mean, somebody sits down at a typewriter or a computer these days and just makes up a story that Paul wants to indoctrinate American Christians into a Black Madonna cult. And you're going from India, and you're going, wow, they just make up the story.
I didn't know.
Oh, you didn't know? You haven't read it. There's a lot of blogs that have that.
I'm sorry, I haven't read
that. And take every little thread, Eloisa, the name for God, and Sarayu, and everything plays into this. And when you actually tell these people, one was writing me later, I said, you know what, that's not even true. And they're going, well, who says it isn't? I was there. But you would lie. And here's the deal about transference. If you're lying about someone, it's your first belief that the person you're lying about would lie about you or would lie about what you're saying. Because if lies are so easy to tell, that's what I've noticed. People who lie a lot accuse other people of being liars. I mean, you go and say, listen, I was in on the whole writing of this thing. I got to tell you, nobody here is interested in spurring American Christianity into a Black Madonna cult. And the person says, yeah, but that's just what you're saying.
Hello? Who else would be saying it?
Hello? You're talking to somebody who was there when it happened, and you still aren't going to believe it. And
I think the thing, crazy. I mean, because I had a whole bunch of buddies that, you know, it's like if Obama gets elected, this is going to be the doom and gloom. You might as well start getting out of the sandwich boards because the end is near. And I sit there going like, I just don't. I mean, I look at this guy coming out of nowhere. Really. I mean, it's like 4 years and all of a sudden major platform. You're just going like, guess what? Maybe God's behind that. How else do you explain the rise of somebody out of kind of nowhere in such a short span?
Al Qaeda.
Sure. That could be it too. It could be a Black Madonna cult. I mean, you know, there's a lot of things.
It's a Black Messiah cult.
There you go. There you go. And But I look at this and it's like, I don't have... I don't have the gumption to just like, you know what? I think my opinions and my conclusions, they're right and everyone else is just plain out wrong. You're just going like, I don't know. It wasn't what I wanted.
Right.
But maybe there's something bigger going on here that could be marvelous. And I certainly would love to be a part of that.
Absolutely. And I can imagine how people who, even involved in this election, see everything as so black and white. It's not. It's just, I can make Obama black and McCain white, and lo and behold, they are actually. But you know, people can just take.
But you could also make Obama white.
You could, and many people did. But you know what? Really, at the end of the day, when you looked at McCain's concession speech and the people booing while he's trying to talk about, hey, he's my president, I'm committing my loyalty, and boo, 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 and just how disgusting that whole attitude is, and he's having to quiet him down. Hey, you guys shut up, this looks ridiculous. And then you got the whole Obama crowd, and people just crying their eyes out, and just excited for the first time that someone may be bringing hope to their lives, and to the future of this nation, because we're stuck in a pretty deep hole.
God bless whoever's sitting in that chair. I really don't think there is so much power in one political appointment of a president that is going to be able to change all of this. I'm just going to, like, you know what? It isn't up to that one guy. And it isn't going to be solved by that one guy.
Absolutely not.
And I don't even think it was caused by that one other guy. I think we have a much bigger reality here.
Yep.
And we have several decades of just blatant self-interest that was blind to the future ramifications of what we're doing. And at some point, I love the fact that you can't escape reality. That's the one thing that is, in my mind, the silver lining in all the dark clouds is the fact that, you know what? I think God is committed to truth in the inward parts. Whether you acknowledge him, believe in him, or follow him, there is sewn into the fabric of the universe. Reality still wins.
Reality wins out over everything.
You know, I mean, at the end of the day, you can paint whatever picture you want, but reality is what you're going to have to deal with.
Yeah, and we can argue today about whether Obama's presidency is going to be a great one or a total bust. But you know what? It's not going to matter what we say today. 4 years from now, we're going to know. We're going to exactly know that. What's amazing in California, an incredibly liberal state, by the time it's part of voting for Obama, as I know it doesn't count. He wins the state anyway. But beside that, in such a liberal state, the marriage amendment, the gay marriage amendment, passed that to outlaw gay marriages in California. So you're going, wow, how strange is that? So it's not everybody who's voting for Obama is not given to his social agenda. And I think he was against gay marriage.
Did you see the protesters in the street?
Oh, last
in the
night, yeah.
Yeah, and I sit there and it's like, yeah. I think the thing that I don't understand, I cock my head and just go like, what? Here you have two elections in a row. We have a referendum like this where the vote passes according to some desire to hold to a traditional definition. Last time they overturn it in the Supreme Court is, well, that's illegal or that's wrong.
They probably will this one too.
And you're just going like, okay, but where does democracy work? I mean, where is the voice of the people?
Well, democracy isn't just the majority gets what they want. That's not how it works.
I understand that.
Because otherwise you've got two wolves going out with a sheep to lunch and voting on what they're going to eat. And the poor sheep loses. That's Ben Franklin's definition of democracy. So you got the rule of law. I think here's the only way I think we fix the marriage deal. Government's just got to get out of the marrying business. It's just civic contracts, civic partnership. Let that happen. And then let the church, let faith communities, let whatever decide what marriage is and what they're going to marry and not marry. I think it's wrong to have the government in that playing field totally. And every time we fight for this, and the way the way California got this all messed up by the courts giving the rights to gay couples to marry 4 months ago, then they could talk about this initiative as we're taking rights away from somebody. When in fact, in California, gay couples can have virtually all the rights that a married couple has. We're really fighting over the term marriage, and marriage has meant something for thousands of years.
Yeah,
it has been a man and a woman marrying and raising children together. And if the gay, I can understand why the gay community wants that. They consider evangelical Christians their repressors, and doggone, we're going to take everything we can get from them. That's part of what drives all that anger. And it's not totally undeserved, because we've definitely told lots of lies about the gay community to somehow marginalize them in years past.
Yeah, I just, you know, I think the whole idea that I'm going to force my will on somebody else, or I'm going to force someone to validate me, just the whole dynamics of just going like, you know what? I don't know that that's ever going to work, regardless of who has more votes and who has more power. The idea of forcing your will. Forcing your way, as if that's
the rest of the culture must adjust to my need and desire.
Yeah, you just go like, gosh, there's something off kilter there. That you're just like, I don't think God's kingdom works that way, because I don't see the king forcing his will.
For Jesus to come and live among us and say, look, it's not, I'm not asking you to serve me, but it's the Son of Man who came to seek and save the lost. He came to serve, not be served. My goodness, if he got that right, I think he showed us a whole different level of power, that this whole political democracy, fighting for rights, all that stuff, is totally undermined by
it. And it always lets reality win.
Yeah.
Regardless of what that is. If someone's heart is dead set to say, you know what, I want my own darn way, And I'm going to have it at any cost.
At your expense, I'm going to have my way.
No, the king has set up his kingdom where it's like, okay. But there's a greater power of love that can actually change the inclination of that heart. If it gets touched by this real power of love, then maybe that heart doesn't have to be in that self-seeking mode. You just go like, reality wins. And there's a much better way to see a transformation of society than the haranguing and the forcing of our will, even in the legislative courts. I'm going to, as much as we live in America, I'm going to exercise my right to be able to the privilege and responsibility to vote. I think that's great.
Yeah.
But I really don't have any hope that that's going to bring about change in the human heart. It just won't.
No, it won't. And our anger and lying about other people and
makes a deeper ditch.
Booing people, all that plays into that old power construct that, you know, whether you win or lose, it's just a big fight and you live to fight another day instead of let's live in a different kingdom. Nothing that happened Tuesday changes one whit about what God is doing and revealing in the world.
No.
And I like that, what you're saying about reality always wins out. It just does. And the lies will sort themselves out. The promises, whether valid or not, will sort themselves out. Yeah. And God will still be satisfied. Anyway, in the long run, what you got to say, if we believe this, the scriptures of God raising up people to power and tearing them down as he wills, and maybe that was easier to believe back in the old king days when, right, you know, a king raised up by power and force and all that. Is it true also in a democracy?
I think it is.
Absolutely, I think it is. So we've got the president God wants. God has raised this up. Now, it doesn't always mean God raises up a president to bless us. God knows that isn't true. Or a king. There were a lot of bad kings in Israel and other countries that God that sorted his purpose through.
Do you think there's always a one-to-one correlation between that? That it's like whoever is in power is there because God granted that?
I do.
You do?
I do.
Okay.
At the end of the day, I think, I don't know what level, is city council members in Moore Park? But
for me, I hope I'm not like a heretic, but part of me goes like, you know what? I don't know.
You are a heretic,
okay,
by the way. I've got numerous blogs telling me you are.
Okay. I'm too busy to read them.
It's okay. I can keep you informed on these things.
In that whole dynamic, I just go like, you know what? I think you have the dance of, we have a right to vote. We can exercise our selection. And is God, you know, the master puppeteer pulling all those strings? I don't know. I think you have the dance of that. I think God's involved. I think we're involved. And I think reality will reveal itself. I don't know that, well, it's ordained. It's God's choice that it's Barack Obama. I personally don't know that. And it's like, okay, but the thing that I did love that really gave me hope is in his speech when all of a sudden they said, for all of those that didn't vote for me, I hear you too. And I will be your president as well. I'll be honest. At that moment, he won my heart a little bit.
Oh.
Because I sat there going like, you know what? I hope that's not just a really great speechwriter. I hope that really came from his heart.
Well, how different was that from 4 years ago when someone said, I got a mandate now?
Yeah.
I mean, gee, how was that helpful?
It's not.
I love the different heart. That's one of the things at the end of the day. I don't like that Obama has voted present at most of his legislative votes.
Yeah, it's kind of like, well, that's not a real great record.
I don't like that he bought the vote in America somewhat by saying, I'm going to give a tax cut to 95% of you.
That was not working in my household.
How is that not buying an election? I mean, I hated that.
That's the whole entitlement.
It was real in terms of a larger policy he has in mind. So, you know, but still, I think it's horrible. But at the end of the day, if he's going to be, and I hope we hold his feet to that. I hope we say, doggone it, then be all of our president. Don't just represent leftist attitudes and ambitions. Don't just support an entitlement society, which we can't afford to do right now anyway. So that's not even going to be an issue the next 4 years. But get people to think differently. And when he raises up, you can be, that this, his election proves that there's opportunity here in America for people who are willing to work hard and do what's right. Problem is, we're too selfish. This from, we talked about the economy a while back, which is just incredible. Here's a couple of things statistics that have come my way. Do you realize right now we owe in America, households in America own the same amount of money as our gross national product every year? We actually owe as much as we can produce in a year.
You're kidding.
No.
That's trillions, right?
Yeah, trillions.
There's more zeros than I understand.
And our government owes more than that. It's even worse than that.
Oh, you mean our private households?
Private households owe more than our gross net. We have learned for the last 20 years to live on easy credit. People send you credit card, put everything you want, put food on credit, put taxes on credit.
I know, man. When they started explaining the economy that everything's built on credit, I said, they're like, well, that's a recipe for failure.
Oh, it gets back to what you said about reality resetting. Someone else said last year, our number one export from America, you know what it was?
Illusions.
Close. It was debt.
We exported, oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah. Than anything else we produced last year, we exported debt.
Oh, that's great.
To China.
Yeah, China owes us, don't they?
And then here's this. I love this. This is from Nancy Gibbs.
I had to learn Chinese.
Nancy Gibbs, Time Magazine, for nearly 3 million years of human history, saving an investment was a dumb idea.
3 million?
3 million years.
Well, I didn't know we had that many.
She's obviously not a creationist. We hunted, we gathered, we consumed, and we moved on to greener pastures. Only when migrating tribes learned to settle down and farm did they need to save and plan, storing seeds and surpluses to tide them over from season to season. We've had 10,000 years to absorb the truth that cultures that don't value thrift ultimately flame out and die. Apparently, that isn't long enough to learn this lesson. That we're right there again. The whole culture of thrift, of saving, of not living on everything you make. And you've got this whole house-buying culture 5 years ago of people moving into houses they could not afford at rates they were not even paying down. They've got a five-year mortgage. They've not paid one bit of their principal. You've got people in homes now they can't afford. The value isn't even close to what they owe on the property. And, did CEOs and financial people let that happen? Yes, it did. But there's a larger thing here. We were a culture that was living on our own amusement. We'll just buy and have. And we got, look at our culture. The amusements we have, the size of the TVs people own, the homes, the cars, the recreation. Yeah, it's time for a reset. And we're going to get it. My goodness, it's coming. Let's get on to better things.
And with that forecast, ladies and gentlemen,
times are coming and God's going to make himself known in a better way. I just think that's what's going on.
Reality wins. I love that.
And then God demonstrates himself when we finally get out of our illusions and see life as it really is and see him as he really is. That'll be fun. This is from Margie. She says, I think you guys owe me a box of tissues.
What?
Why? Because every time I listen to your podcast, I cry my eyes out and how much Father loves me.
Oh, well, that's good.
Isn't that nice?
Sure, get her address.
Send us an address. We'll send you a box of Kleenex.
Two.
And I've got her name here, so don't you fakers out there write in for your free box of Kleenex. She said, I cry my eyes, and much Father loves me. It took me a long time to finally call God Abba Father, and I'm still learning how much he loves me. I grew up in a very dysfunctional family with a mentally sick mother and a non-existent drunkard father. But through it all, we've all given our lives to Jesus. My husband and I are the only ones that have left the organized religion because we just got tired of being used and not seeing any fruit for our labor. Someday I hope that my family will follow and see that they don't have to work for his love like we tried for anyone to love us growing up. But again, I thank you so much for your podcast because they are so refreshing and enlightening. Also, you've read The Shack, and I think it's the most refreshing and awesome representation of my father. Father would be very proud of you. Which leads to an interesting question. Does God have pride?
I think in the good sense.
There's a good sense of pride.
I'm thinking that the statement of I'm proud of you.
That always sounds weird to me.
Does it?
Yeah, even when I think about it for my kids, I used to say it all the time. And now I think I'm proud of you. I'm going, no, I love you. I care about you. I appreciate what you're doing and your hard work. I don't use the word. I don't know why. I just have gotten to a point of putting it in the place that I guess there is a positive side of proud. But I don't know.
I think because it's such an entrenched little phrase in our culture that when you know someone's not proud of you, that leaves such a hurtful place. I don't mind using it over my kids so that they know I am.
Yeah.
And I think if there is a positive side, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I know.
But if there is a positive side, part of me is going like, yeah, I take delight in my kids. I'm thrilled with their development.
Yeah, love
that. I'm thankful for the self-responsibility I see, the conscientiousness that grows. I mean, those are the things that I think that word is trying to affirm.
Yeah, I do. But I've gotten weird about the word lately. I just try and avoid it. All the other things you say are great, but pride, like somehow what you do reflects
on. All right, William, I'm not proud of you.
I'm not either today. I keep having to push my husband to continue to read because he does not like fiction Christian books, and he freaked a little when God was a black lady.
You think?
Let's be clear. God's not a black lady. God revealed himself in the persona of a black woman. That's very different. And God does that every day. God reveals himself through black women, black men, white women, Asian women, Asian children.
Yellow, red, black, red,
God
white.
Reveals himself in all kinds of people. People really miss that point. But he continued on and was so blessed. We are learning how much God loves us and learning to love others just the same. It's so new. God bless you guys for both and continuing to talk about the truth.
Now, isn't it so interesting that I think I love about the shack is I love that it makes God accessible and tangible and in a person form.
Yep.
But I don't want to let go of the fact that, you know what, but he's bigger than that.
Yeah, so much.
The true comfort and security is that he's not just localized there. He's everywhere. I mean, it's like, you know what? There's not a place I can go that he's not going to be, and he is bigger than anything that I can taste, touch, feel, whatever. I just love the fact that I can also taste, touch, and feel.
Yes.
And you get the joy of the both and.
And even Jesus was clear that what I would be inside you is more real than what I've been outside of you. He talks to his own disciples, better for you that I go away. Because if I go away, I'm sending the comforter. And he talks about this being more a real experience.
And
inside of him, the non-tangible, there were times I used to just beg Jesus, you know, at a very difficult time in my life, would you just walk in here, sit in that chair, and tell me what to do, and I'll do it. I don't care. Just tell me. I'm so tired of trying to think. I'm so tired of trying to guess. And that was the days when I'd read those scriptures about, yeah, it's better for you that I go in. Well, no, it's not. Don't say it's not better. It's not better at all. It's one of those growth modes. This is what we're talking about this morning. We're like, you know, I can't even remember the last time I begged for that kind of a moment. I don't remember because the reality of him, and it's not just him inside. As somebody was telling me last week, I hate that idea of Jesus lives inside, like some kind of alien in our body kind of thing. More specifically,
too many sci-fi features.
We believe he's in the little heart in there, you know, dodging all the blood vessels. It's not really. It's that we're living inside of him, and he's living inside of us. That's not the geographical proximity. It's the reality of a relationship. When Jesus could say in an upper room, "I am in the Father." He's still in an upper room. Doesn't mean he's in heaven. He's defining the nature of how wonderful.
The limits of our spatial depth, dimensions.
Really? Yeah, it gets some pretty weird stuff. Jesus sitting in there in your blood vessels, just watching the blood go by. It's just weird. But the reality.
No, that doesn't give me a lot of comfort.
But the reality with which he engages is tangible. I got another letter from an angry guy this week who thought the shack was true. And I wrote him back saying, what about God wearing a dress sitting in a shack in Oregon wasn't clear to you that this was fiction? And his response was, well, I believe in miracles. I believe God could do that. Well, I believe God could do that too. The fact is, when God made himself known on the planet, it was through a Jewish baby growing up into becoming a man. That's God's best expression of himself in the world, the shack notwithstanding.
The one true incarnation.
And if we've missed that, if that isn't the greater invite, if by the Holy Spirit God lives, if that isn't the greater invite, then, boy, I hope I can find a shack someday.
No, but
God will show up for a week.
You know, I think what it is symptomatic of is there is such a yearning for the doctrines that we sort of in voluminous sermons here to be brought to the temporal here and now that make a difference with the person I can know. I think that's where there's the deep hungers. I want to go up to that shack. I want to sit down with Papa too. I think people haven't been brought into that relational understanding of salvation.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, this is eternal life, that you might know him. And you're just going like, wait a minute, it's not just, oh, I've signed my fire insurance. It's no, there's a relationship to engage. And I don't think people are being introduced to a person. I think they're being given a creed.
Oh, I think we've destroyed the incarnation. I think Christianity all but ignores the incarnation of God among men and then the resurrected Christ living alongside us. And we traded that for a list of doctrines you must believe or you're going to hell, and a list of rituals you must observe or you're rebellious, selfish, no good for nothing bigot. It's amazing to me.
You're very good at that.
Well, I just we had the offer of life in the person of the Son, not just when he was here, but now the resurrected Christ who lives in us and lives among us. And we've traded that for a religion called Christianity.
The rules.
That is boring. Oh, it's not only boring, it's irrelevant. That's why I'm sitting there begging Jesus to I'm one of those guys teaching other people how to do this religious thing. And I'm caught in stuff going, but God, I don't have any idea who you are. I don't have any idea of what you want of me. And this isn't helping me get there. But like religion does, that's my fault. I'm not doing something right. So I'm just begging Jesus to Now, in the last 14 years, not even thought about it. Jesus is real enough, more real today in my life. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm going to love the day I see him face to face.
That's going to be cool.
But more real today in my life even than other people I know face to face, flesh to flesh.
Well, it's just interesting. There's a little phrase that I think has become part and parcel in our hearts of recent days. It is what it is. And what I mean by that is not sort of a fatalistic resignation to, it's just what, but there's more the acceptance that, you know what, as opposed to my trying to change everything and bend it to my will, let me just look at what really is going on. And God, where are you in that?
Yeah.
As opposed to the outcome isn't what I want, therefore God's absent, or I'm somehow being punished. It's more like, it is what it is. Now, where are you, God?
Yeah.
And how do I connect with you in that? And maybe at that point, I'll see something that I didn't see before, that my own little self-interest blinded me to the reality of a bigger drama going on here. And that's kind of how I sort of approached the whole election is, my kids, they wanted their guy to win. And it's not that I didn't either, but I sat there going like, I never really thought he was going to. And so you just have to go like, I was already prepared. But handling disappointment, I used it as a moment of just saying, guys, maybe there's something different going on here than what we thought or just what we wanted. And let's be open to that.
And I love that seems to be the way that Jesus lived. It's not a kingdom that he had to bring to earth and he had to force into. The kingdom was a reality of God's will and purpose alive in the earth. And it was just living inside that reality instead of the reality, the false reality, the illusions, the matrix that the world tries to get us to live in. This is true. You must fight for your way. And if you don't fight for your way, Jesus lived in the space that was the kingdom.
And, same geography.
And he moved around in that space. Yeah, right on the planet. And it made him different when he was with tax gatherers or sinners or prostitutes or with Pharisees. It made him different than anybody else around him because he wasn't motivated or controlled by the same. He lived in the reality that is God. I try to say it to people about the church today. People say, well, I hate church. Organized, I left the church. The church, God's people in the earth, is a reality.
Yeah.
Live inside that reality. Yeah, enjoy the fullness of that. Don't try to say, well, it's got to look like that. It's got to look like this. Really, the church of Jesus Christ is a reality in the earth. The way God asks you to interact with other believers at any season of your life, follow him in that reality. And you'll find that things are not as horrible, ugly as we're led to believe they are when you just look at the matrix to define your reality. Because it's not.
And I don't feel like I have to rage against it. Yep. There's a confidence of going like, I think our king does win.
Good segue here into something that Mick sent us about the Bug Zapper podcast we did recently. He said, great podcast. And then he quotes Madeline Lingle from a book, Walking on Water. We do not draw people to Christ by loudly discrediting what they believe, by telling them how wrong they are and how right we are, but by showing them a light that is so lovely that they want with all their hearts to know the source of it. Isn't that a beautiful quote?
Oh, absolutely.
And he went on, Mick said, and added this, I love how you've completely dismissed and abdicated the job of protecting the truth. The truth is what love is, and love is the truth. Love is its vehicle, and we get that. And we get up off the sidewalk and stop wondering why all our efforts aren't getting us anywhere on this journey. I love that.
Yeah.
Man, it really is to live inside that space of love. And when reality wins at the end of the day, and someone said this to me, it was Gail Irwin, the author of The Jesus Style. We're in the midst of my betrayal and lies and feeling discredited and feeling just horrible. And he called one day, said, "How are you doing?" He didn't know anything going on yet. I hadn't talked to him. And I said, "Really hurting today." And he said, "What happened?" I told him a little about what happened. He said, "You know what, Wayne? When you're following Jesus, time and light are on your side." And that brought such comfort to me. It was, you know, because the reality was, no, it's what these people are saying and what these people are doing. And this has to be stopped. And my whole life's been this, that. And it was all about me. And you get down to, whoa. When you're following Jesus, time and light are on your side. Reality wins out at the end of the day.
And his name is
and
Jesus.
And therefore, you don't have to protect truth. And you don't have to fight people into your way of thinking.
Yeah.
I like that. Live with a light that's so irresistible that others want to know the source of it. Whoa. I know you thought we were done. Actually, we did too. And in fact, Brad's left the studio. But after he left, I got an email from our brothers and sisters in Kenya, and the need there is still pretty grave. So I want to take this opportunity to invite others of you. They're needing about $3,000 in emergency relief for people other than folks in their immediate area. They've gotten some access to a new part of the country that's pretty devastated still from the tribal riots and clashings of about a year ago. So they were just saying, hey, if there's anything extra, we know some people who need some help. And that was in response not to their request to me, but to my question to them. How are things going? Are you guys set? What else do you need? So we're encouraging them at every point to turn to Jesus, not the God Journey crowd. But we know many of you have been helpful, and so we want to provide another conduit to that. Donation buttons at lifestream.org or at thegodjourney.com. Let us know it's for Kenya. Every dime of it will go to help with brothers and sisters there. We're going to get a checkout in the next day or so, so we're already going to send ahead of whatever else may help with that. But just wanted you to know the need's pretty great, and if you want to help, you can. So until next week, God bless you on your God journey.
Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.